Hello and welcome to At the Movies with Mike and Marie. I'm Marie Westhaver.
And I'm Mike Giuliano.
And today we're going to talk about Gemini Man and Jexy, starting with Gemini Man. Where do you want to start, Mike?
Why don't we talk about it technically? Because Ang Lee, the director, has made some really good films. I don't think this is one of his better films, but he's made some really good films. And technically, he's really accomplished. But there's something I think a bit problematic here, and this is where we can talk tech for a little bit. He's using a high frame rate as he shoots, and he first used it in his film Billy Lynch's Long Halftime Walk, which about five or six people saw. I was one of them alone in the theater.
I was one of the two, too.
Yeah, but the point is there's an argument that's kind of raging there. If you've seen that film or if you're familiar with the format, which is used for 3D filmmaking a lot, but using it in a flat film, if you will, quote-unquote flat, as to whether that kind of hyper-clarity makes the film more realistic or less realistic. And it's an almost philosophical argument as much as technological. What do you think?
Did you see it in 3D?
No, I usually avoid 3D movies, and that's a whole other stump speech. But I know you did, and I didn't. So why don't you give me your take on it?
Well, I absolutely loved the 3D. Overall, I thought the movie was pretty weak in terms of the story. But I thought the 3D was amazing because the depth of field was so incredible. You felt like you were in the room with Will Smith. I saw a movie where Will Smith and I had a beer and we kicked some skulls in the catacombs.
Well, I'm so envious.
And sparks ended up in my lap. And it felt like I was in the movie.
Well, but the point is still there for me because having seen Billy Lynch and seeing this, and admittedly seeing them flat, there is that sharper image. And you're going to have that whether you're watching it in 3D or flat. So my point is still there, I think, in the sense that, for instance, this movie is a globe-hopping film. It's like so many action-adventure films now. And there are a few reasons for that kind of action-adventure format. Think of the template of, like, you know, James Bond pictures or Bourne Identity, whatever. But one of them is simply with the global marketplace. It doesn't hurt to have scenes set in all these different countries because your audience is around the world, not just domestic. But here you're jumping from Colombia, South America to various European spots, specifically Budapest. And as I was watching it, there's some really beautiful architecture and some really good framing of landscape. But sometimes it seemed so neat, so clean. You know what it was like? Almost like an old-fashioned color postcard where it seems like it's been airbrushed. It's been cleaned up so much that I know that's Budapest. I recognize parliament buildings, but it seems like what I call the postcard image of it. What do you think?
I didn't mind the postcard aspect of it because Ang Lee is so great at creating beautiful images. I'm thinking of Life of Pi in particular, where imagery is just so stunning. And there were some nice moments in the film where the framing was just fabulous, especially in 3D, like in the beginning where that train comes at you and then it makes a sharp curve around the screen. Very cool in 3D. But I don't know. I mean, do you think that really detracted from your enjoyment of the film?
It did a bit because even though, again, he has an eye. I always say of directors, who has an eye? He definitely has an eye. There's some really good framing, really good compositions. But sometimes when an image is like too neat, too clean, too sharp, it does seem like it's, even if it hasn't been, played with on a computer screen, it still sometimes seems like it's not quite real. And that's where, like, hyper-reality sometimes seems like the opposite. And I know I'm not the only, some of the other critics writing about it have expressed that same feeling. It didn't ruin the film for me. It's a relatively weak film anyway. It wasn't as if somehow this is what did it in. I think it did itself in on various levels. But I did want to start off on that technical note because Ang Lee certainly is hooked on this and, you know, uses it quite well in his own way. And I'm thinking we may well be seeing more of it because, you know, directors will realize, well, you know, frame rates are not fixed. They don't have to be standardized in a certain way. You can experiment or try other things. And I'm not opposed to that at all. It's just a matter of, you know, when it seems to work and when it doesn't particularly.
Now, how will that work for people who wait to see it on their regular home system?
That's a good question. I'm not enough of a techie to really address it. How's it going to look there? We'll have to wait and see and then get back to you on that.
Now, I did see it in the middle of the day with nobody else in the theater. So it really did feel like I was in the theater with Will Smith.
Okay, rub it in.
Like a private showing.
All right, well.
But, you know, without the 3D marvel, I think I would have been much more bored much earlier.
Well, you know, it's a combination of that striking process and an extremely photogenic actor. And so when you plant him in that landscape, it's hard to go wrong. I mean, he's going to hold the image, as they say.
How did you like the de-aging?
That's the other thing on a technological note that I want to talk about. Whether we like it or not, we're going to have a lot more of it. In effect here, and I don't want to spoil the story, though, and I think spoilers are almost inevitable here with talking about Gemini Man, but the fact that we see the Will Smith character, who is a retired or wants to be a retired sniper, and then we get to see him interact with, I'll say, a much younger character played by Will Smith, where they use the de-aging process. And
I think that's been given away by the trailer, so you're not giving away anything.
Well, trailers give away everything.
And that's
so,
true,
and,
they
and
do.
So that's a whole other, we could do a program just on that. When you see the trailer, you don't need to see the film. But I try to be cautious to some extent if somebody has somehow like avoided trailers and just goes in cold to see it. But in any event, that Will Smith will encounter essentially a younger character played by Will Smith, and they're using a de-aging process. Now, it's not the first time. I mean, certainly Samuel L. Jackson and Captain Marvel. And this season, a film we haven't seen yet because it's just unrolling, will be Martin Scorsese's new film, The Irishman, where Robert De Niro, and I've seen still photos, De Niro as he is now and as he is a younger version. My mental jury is still out on that one. In some ways, it seems like a Pandora's box situation. Mm-hmm. Some of the possibilities might be playful and delightful, some of the others might be horrendous. And you know what I'm getting at? Like,
yep.
what presents come tumbling out of that box, and how do you look? And it's almost like when people in Hollywood go in for plastic surgery, sometimes the results are unfortunate.
That's a good way to say
the younger version of yourself, it looks like the surface of a drum, you know, so it might not be the ideal thing. I don't know. What do you think about it conceptually? I mean, we were talking technologically, it's amazing they can do it, but conceptually, philosophically, as to whether it should be done or situations where it should be done and maybe others where it should not.
I read that the original script was written for Clint Eastwood. And I wondered if that would have been a totally different movie. What do you think?
Well, I think it would have been a very different film. And it's entirely speculative, of course, at that point as to how it would have played. Yeah.
I mean, I thought that the action sequences, and I didn't know if this was the 3D, seemed almost like they weren't very fast. It was like the timing of getting the 3D right kind of made it almost seem like slow motion.
Well, thank you for saying that, because I was asking questions of myself in terms of what I was seeing or thought I was seeing. One of the reasons why I was bothered by that frame rate was what I mentioned earlier in terms of hyper clarity, if you will. But where I was less clear myself was as I watched the action sequences, I thought, am I a little pokey or is the image a little pokey?
I thought it was pokey.
It was. It seemed like it was not quite slow motion, but not regular motion.
It held the frame.
And I thought, if I were running down the street, either chasing somebody or being chased, I might be a little faster with it. And where I really noticed it was with some of the car chases.
Yes.
I thought, well, that could be my car because it doesn't go very fast anymore, you know? And it just seemed like that was kind of distracting, actually. And I ultimately held judgment there because I wasn't quite trusting myself. Even like, well, is that really slow, or is it just the film itself seems like it's, you know, in some ways slower or less substantial than I'd want it to be? But now that you and I are both voicing the same sentiment, I think that's technologically an aspect of what he's doing, is that it tends to slow things down a little bit, doesn't it?
There was a beautiful scene with two motorcycles connecting
yeah.
and spinning.
Oh, yeah. That's a nice scene.
And that, in particular, I noticed, you know, the connection and then the swerve, beautifully done. But it seemed too slow for how I would think that would actually happen.
You know, it did. And I wanted to go with it in the sense of what Ang Lee was trying to do in that particular scene. Think of a pas de deux with two motorcycles, mm-hmm. or, you know, motorcycle and human kind of thing. All these different permutations, like a choreographer would work them in terms of vehicle and person. And it was beautifully choreographed. And what I finally did there, maybe I'm being overly generous, but I finally thought that it almost was like a balletic move where you
yes.
want to slow it down. So in that particular sequence, I was fine with it. Because it's almost like if you're watching a kung fu, you know, martial arts epic, and they really do slow it down so you can appreciate every chop and every
or
bit
or
of flying
time.
Through the air. It's a variation on bullet time. This is like motorcycle time or something. You know? I don't know what to call it even. It's something new. But I think that might have been, because there it was really slowed down. And I'm thinking you must have been deliberate with that. But other scenes, as you say, and there are a lot of chases in this film, other scenes, it seemed to me that it was just a little slower than it should have been. And that's not necessarily a virtue in a you know, an action-oriented film, and particularly in films nowadays, like where we have Fast and Furious type shooting and editing, particularly, right? That kind of razor sharp editing. Here it seemed like a little pokey. I keep using that word, but it did.
Yeah, it's a good word.
Well, I'll use it again.
Say it again, Mike. Was it pokey? It was.
Thank you.
Johnny Depp also turned this down when they were, you know, talking about who to do.
Well, I turned it down too. You didn't know that. I thought, no, even I draw the line. Yeah, it's one of those films that had a kind of long entangled production history. And I don't know specific reasons for some of the people saying no. And, you know, it gets like inside baseball that way. And I wasn't inside for some of those negotiations as to why people were dropping out of it.
Nicolas Cage as well. Well, in fact, I think for 7 years he was the front runner for this movie.
Well, it would have probably been the best film he made in the last decade. He's a genre unto himself at this point. He's Nicolas Cage.
I did like seeing Clive Owen.
You know, I've always liked him as an actor, and he's reliable. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's got this really solid presence. He's always believable. He's always understated. Even when action gets overstated, he knows how to underplay. Because he's playing, well, Henry Brogan is the character name for Will Smith, you know, this retired sniper. And Clay Veris is the character played by Clive Owen, who is Henry's former boss. So just to clarify there in terms of, you know, he's retired or wants to be, and here's his boss that he's still connected to in some ways. That's the character played by Clive Owen. And considering it's kind of a stock role, a stock part, mm-hmm. there's not, like on the page, on the scripted page, there's not a whole lot for Clive Owen to work with. I mean, he plays the heavy, right, or one of the heavies. But he does it so well, and it's so unglamorous, and I mean that as a compliment, that he's just like into that character, and he doesn't have to do much to seem menacing, you know? It's just like the flick of an eye or a gesture or just, you know, some little thing, and you can tell, you know, this guy is a tough cookie, you know? You don't want to mess with him.
Now, Clive Owen's pretty well known for a series he did for BMW called The Hire.
I know.
And in each one of the episodes of The Hire, each one's directed by a different director, Clive Owen's job is to be the driver and make the BMW look cool.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the episodes, of course, had Ang Lee. Ang Lee was the director.
Yeah.
So it's kind of nice to see Clive Owen in a movie that's really about a lot of car chases.
Exactly.
Where he's not the driver. But you look at it and you think, oh, yeah, the driver. When's he going to get behind the wheel?
It was one of the principal satisfactions of the film.
Yes. And I have to say the explosions were spectacular.
There are some very good explosions in it. So if you like explosion cinema, you will get your fix here. But let's talk about the basic storyline to the extent we can. I mean, you earlier alluded to a kind of thinness, and I think that's a good word to use, that it's kind of a stock issue plot in some ways.
And they take too long to get to the cloning thing.
Yeah, the film runs just under 2 hours, and cloning is going to be an important part of it without completely spoiling the game. But it takes a long time to get there, doesn't it?
It does.
Because this guy's retired, we spend a lot of time. I'm never going to retire now because it's kind of boring. I mean, in the early scenes in the film, he's just sitting around on the porch, right? He's on his porch in Georgia. And like all films nowadays, I think, are being made in Georgia. So he's on his porch in Georgia, just contemplating whatever, the marsh. and it's nice. You know, whatever you think of the frame rate, it's nice there. But you know what? It's so leisurely at times. It just mm-hmm. takes too long. There's no tension there. When it finally hits, my attention was wandering already. So when the rather slow-paced, fast action scenes hit, not that it lost me, but I hadn't been grabbed. And it seems to me a film like this would play better if it were a half hour shorter. You know why? He's on his porch, nice day, suddenly, whatever the suddenly is,
kaboom.
Right? The kaboom. Whether it's a phone call or a bad guy breaking through the door or whatever. His boss, you know, texting him anything that would do it, but it takes a long time before you get any real kabooms.
Yeah, although I do like Will Smith, which is why I found it strange that he was so flat in this movie. Do you think there'll be any technical awards at the Oscars for this?
The film itself's been speaking of flat, it's been relatively flat at the box office, so it's not like the public would clamor for it. I don't think it's going to be remembered particularly. I think quite possibly in some of the technical categories it could get Academy Award nominations, but certainly not in any of the acting categories, because even though Clive Owen is good, it's very much a supporting role. It's not a drumbeater of a role. It's just good work in a mediocre film. Will Smith, he's got that photogenic presence. He looks great in the film. And, you know, his character is 51, and he talks about that a lot. He looks great for 51. But the performance seemed kind of flat. Something's not quite there. And this is where it's hard to find the exact words to describe that, when you know that an actor is on and when the character's kind of coasting.
And I wouldn't say that that's because he can't do drama, because he was great in The Pursuit of Happiness.
Oh, he can. That's not the issue there. It's armchair psychoanalysis as to why in this film. He's fine. What I call okay fine.
Yeah, he's all
right. He's okay fine. He's all right. But somehow there's something not quite there, a certain gravitas. Or when you think of the existential issues here, because in its own way, it's got a story right out of, you know, Fyodor Dostoevsky or Edgar Allan Poe in terms of doubling. You would think that would get you kind of worked up as a person, right? If you suddenly went down the hallway and saw yourself approaching. And he has some facial reaction shots, but even there, it just sort of seems like, you know, I get the feeling like, well, the actor's, you know, not only read the script, but memorized it, so he's not surprised anymore, you know? It's kind of like, here we are.
One thing I think they could have done is whoever they used for the stunt double, every now and then you look at him, and for a brief moment, you think, that's not Will Smith. So with all that technology they had to de-age Will Smith, they should have superimposed his face. Because the stunt guys did not look like him.
You know what? This is still a problem, that a lot of films like this extensively make use of body doubles. And sometimes it's so obviously the case. Not just in terms of body size, but positioning and so on. It's just, you can tell they've planted someone there. Likewise, when they do in so many films, when you know you have the camera focused on one face and the second principal character is either side profile or mostly from the back, and you realize either A, that it's a body double, or B, it is that actor, but the lines are being being synced, post-synced, and because they're not quite matching up. And you think, with all this technology, couldn't you get like a closer match on between lines and lips?
Yeah, you would think, or at least CGI it.
But it's so often blatantly obvious that this was like synced in later, and the guy wasn't saying it at the moment.
So this is Jerry Bruckheimer's first film with Paramount Pictures since Days of Thunder. So I'm going to use that as our segue into Jexy.
Okay. Okay.
Now, Jexy, I think, is the Joaquin Phoenix film Her, but with an OS with a bad attitude and a penchant for stalking people.
Yeah, so we should let people know what the basic premise is here. You know, as in Her, I mean, we're so reliant on our devices nowadays that that becomes a relationship. And in this particular case, what if you bought your new very smartphone, if you will, you bought that technology, and it not only communicated with you and gave you useful instructions and could do household functions, but if it really had a mind of its own, and a rather malicious mind, perhaps, or an envious, a jealous mind, maybe to put it that way.
The darker side of dating.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's certainly technologically topical that way. And in terms of my basic take on the film, it's interesting that the film has that premise that's so topical, but somehow people must have been watching or texting otherwise, because the film's been kind of like, speaking of flat again, it really hasn't done anything. It opened wide, but hasn't really performed any extent. It's kind of like there, but not there in terms of the commercial box office. And I thought, well, I have a feeling people will catch up with it eventually and watch it on their phones or something. But it'll be there. It's going to have an audience, but in the theaters. But emotionally, my take on it, I actually thought it was quite clever and very funny for about the first 20 minutes. Because, you know, you have, you know, our guy is like startled. What's going on? He's a San Francisco journalist or would-be journalist played by Adam Devine. He's kind of startled. What's going on here? And then you have this sort of, it's sort of a variation on the meet cute or meet nasty situation or both. And there's some very funny scenes early on in terms of, you know, you're just walking down a street in San Francisco and you turn, you know, to the left and your device upbraids you and says, no, dummy, you know, go to the right. I mean, there are a lot of scenes like that really are kind of, or you're in a meeting where, you know, you have a certain etiquette in terms of other people around the table, but suddenly your device misbehaves that way and people, you know, blame you for it. So for those early scenes, it was often quite funny. Where it lost me wasn't just repetition. It was the matter that a lot of the humor, and increasingly was reliant on obscenities, so many curse words. And when I complain about that, people might think, oh, well, he's puritanical and, you know, he's offended by it. And I say, no, it's actually the exact opposite. I'm bored by it. Say something clever, genuinely clever, not just a four-letter word that people are supposed to laugh at. And by the second, thank goodness it's a short film, 84 minutes, because by the home stretch, by the final half hour, it was just one cuss word after another, seemingly. And I know that's the antagonistic relationship with his device at that point. But it wasn't really funny at that point. It wasn't clever. It was just obscene in terms of the stuff being said.
Well, I saw it with a lot of people in the theater. I don't know how they found out about it, because I found out about it by accident. But they all laughed at all of that stuff.
Well, okay.
What I thought was clever is that, you know, when we think about having a relationship with our phone, it's one-sided. It's, you know, you're having the relationship on your terms. What's interesting is that they take it to the next level. Like, well, you know, if you have to be concerned about AI becoming sentient or learning things or developing a personality, then you end up with, like I said, the dark side of dating, where something else, meaning your phone, decides they're in a relationship with you that you don't want and you can't get out of. And that's kind of dark. Nobody's ever really like come up with that sort of scenario. Like, what would we do if they all turned on us now that we're completely addicted to them?
Well, a film like this, though, frankly, is just too light and too silly and too scatological to really pursue that. I mean, it raises those questions, but it's just skimming the surface, if you will.
The relationship between the two leads was, I thought, very realistic, and I thought the dialogue was snappy. Best line from the movie, he works at a place that's, I think, supposed to be like BuzzFeed. And he's in like the middle where, you know, you have to come up with lists.
Right.
And his boss is yelling at the group, you know, come up with lists, pizza, cats. I love cats. And he says, how about 10 cats that look like Ryan Gosling? And his boss says, yeah. Wait, are there any cats that look like Ryan Gosling? He says, well, if you look carefully, they all do.
Yeah, there's some good banter
funny,
in the office.
Yeah,
scenes.
But yeah. They completely waste Wanda Sykes.
Well, let me actually, you know, while we're talking about Jexy still, Jexy, she's actually voiced by Rose Byrne, so you have a name actor doing that. And in terms of favorite lines, mine is actually relatively early in the film where Jexy says, I'm ashamed to be your phone, which I think is very funny, actually.
Now, that is funny.
Now, thank you for mentioning Wanda Sykes, whom I've always liked as an actor. She provides the three best scenes in the film. She plays a saleswoman. You know, when you need to get a new phone, you know, she's the one who greets you in her own way. But the thing is, she's only in three scenes, and she steals every scene she's in. It's a combination of the writing, but more so of the performance. I mean, some of her dialogue's pretty much at the same level as a lot of the other dialogue. She knows how to give a line reading. I mean, she delivers those lines. She's so emphatic, and her face is just a riot to watch. I was laughing every time she was on screen, but she's only there for a few minutes. And so, to your point, yeah, she is basically wasted. And yet, when she's on screen, boy, I sat up in the seat. You know, she got my attention for sure.
She was just as angry as the operating system, though.
Well, her anger seems so genuine. This is a case where when she rips into you, only Samuel L. Jackson could be her peer in uttering certain words.
That is so true.
And all what did make it really funny, though, was the fact that she is the saleswoman there. She's on the floor when you go in, you know, to buy your phone or ask questions and all. But she's not exactly the most polite of salespeople. And she rips into him so much that it's really, really very funny. But, you know, it's hard to recommend the film based on three short scenes.
It does have a nice turn by Justin Hartley from This Is Us.
Okay.
So for fans, you know, he does all right with the movie. And he's a nice little surprise. By the way, it was originally supposed to be called Lexi, but they had trouble getting copyright.
Well, you can
imagine.
So
they just flipped the L.
Yeah.
Made it Jexy instead.
Yeah, well, you can imagine with something like this, you know, we can laugh about it, but what if that's your business, right?
Right.
You know, there's somebody who has a full-time job enforcing copyright for a matter like that, and it's no laughing matter at that point. So, yeah, they very quickly flipped with the title, which, you know, it becomes interesting background detail, but it is, on a more serious note, an indication of how this really is kind of surfing the zeitgeist in terms of relationships people enter into. I mean, you know, what means the most to you? Well, your phone. Mm-hmm. And then I guess your immediate family after that.
Well, your immediate family is in your phone.
Well, yeah, but would you talk to them at all if you didn't have the phone, you know?
Well, I mean, you have to, which family members are we talking about?
That's another conversation.
Now, speaking of Rose Byrne, she recorded all of her lines after filming. So in order to have lines to react to, they put an earpiece in Adam Devine's ear, but it only worked some of the time. So some of the time, Adam would just take the earbud out and do the whole scene without ever hearing anyone talking. He does really well, I think. He's very likable. He's sort of like a poor man's Dennis Quaid.
Yeah, he's got a kind of nebbishy quality there where you think, you know, the schmuck, the schlemiel, my Yiddish is coming out here. But because he can't quite make it in the journalism business, and he's something of a loser, but kind of a nice guy, too. And
he just needs some confidence.
He needs some confidence, and he needs some better manners sometimes, and maybe a better sense of interior design, decor. He could be improved in various ways, but he's not a bad guy. He's kind of likable. And so that relationship that he strikes up with the owner of a bicycle shop, played by Alexander Shipp, it does have a kind of nice, natural feel to it. I mean, considering how contrived and artificial so much by design is in this film, as the two of them banter on the street and as meet-cute moments go, it actually does work. And it's some genuine human feeling, if you will. And she has a nice sense of underplaying, I thought, that she kind of smiles at him because she knows that he's sort of considered a loser by so many people and all. But she kind of likes him for the vulnerability and so on and kind of takes to him that way.
Well, also, when you see that her ex is Jason Hartley playing also a really nice guy, you realize she likes nice guys.
Yeah, but he's so nice. But the ex is such a nice guy. It's like the poster image of nice guy. You know, there's something there that's almost like too good to be true, too nice, too sweet, too considerate. It's like, oh, please have a flaw. Do something wrong.
Well, the point in the movie when the two leads go out on their bikes and he tries to show off and you know it's going to end badly. That was a nice moment because, you know, you're dying for him because you know he's going to do something
but
stupid.
But you see, one reason why those are nice moments is that you have a feeling of real life, two people talking back mm-hmm. and forth, whereas some of the stuff between Jexy and Phil, the name of the journalist, some of that after a while, that's again where I keep harping on the obscenities. It's just like so forced. It's just so relentless that way, you know, of his device cursing him out and that kind of banter back and forth where it just seems like scripted contrivance, you know. And the audience, I saw it with actually the few people who saw the film were all watching it with me, I think, too. The thing was, the audience laughed through all that. It's true. But I find oftentimes you can take any material and you know, put a four-letter word in front of the material and people will laugh. So it's kind of a depressing observation, but that's like an automatic laugh. And I notice it oftentimes where, you know, a line that's, you know, relatively funny, but then the moment that word hits, people start laughing.
Now, there was a controversy after her that Scarlett Johansson should have been able to be nominated for an Academy Award, but she wasn't because she was just a voice. But I thought the acting that I, you know, thought I could see in that role was significant, where here, I don't know that I think that there was anything really groundbreaking in Rose Byrne's performance.
No, not at all. It works, and that's
it. Could have been anybody.
And that's it. Almost any, I had to remind myself that that's who it was. But that's not necessarily something bad. What I'm getting at is sometimes when we hear those voices, whether on our phone or public address system, whatever, they have that generic nice quality. That mm-hmm. we're just like, does this person exist? You know, the perfect diction and whatever she's saying, not always nice, but you know, speaks well. And it's just that generic quality, which actually works for a device like this.
Okay, I'll take that as a good review for Rose without too much fawning.
That's a nice polite way to... I'll be polite even though Jexy isn't.
I think this movie will do better on video.
Yes.
Do we still say video?
Oh, yeah. I tend to still say that. Yeah. I still say silent film, so I say video. But no, I think you're right. I mean, the box office has been small in theaters, but you're absolutely right. I think it's going to be something people will eventually catch up with. And I'm only half joking that, you know, people will watch it on their phone.
You know, that would have actually been a really smart way to deploy the thing.
Uh-huh. Maybe,
you know,
if there's a sequel.
Watch it on your phone.
Jexy 2?
Jexy 2. Jexy Strikes Back.
Jexy'd again.
Oh, I did like the ending, though, with the boss.
Yeah, but we shouldn't spoil the ending.
Right. I didn't say what it was. I just said
okay.
That I liked it.
Oh, okay. I liked it relatively.
I didn't expect to laugh. So just want to mention that coming up on Thursday, November 14th at 7 p.m., Mike and I will be discussing our favorite sci-fi films as part of the Salon series at the Columbia Arts Center.
Yeah, we're looking forward to it. We like to be a tag team that way.
Yes.
Because right now we're disagreeing on the radio, but there we disagree live and in person.
Live and in person with real film clips.
That's right, in the boxing ring.
And the other thing I want to mention is our International Film Festival coming up November 18 through 22. You can find more information about that on our website. And speaking about our website, be sure to visit us at Dragon Digital Radio and listen to this podcast and all of our podcasts on dragondigitalradio.podbean.com. And don't forget to join us next time.
See you then.
Connect with us. We are Dragon Digital Radio.